Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Women Talking is over, but we're just getting started here on Post Show Recaps Theater. My name is Grace. I'm here with my co-host, as always, Ariel. Ariel, how you doing?
Hello there. I'm doing very well.
Join me in this barn loft?
This movie is what? Say?
You want to join me in this barn loft? It's very, yeah.
Kind of. Listen, I'm only here to take minutes and to help out with whatever this is. I'm not here to impose myself, but I'm excited to talk about this movie.
Well, we figured instead of it being Woman Talking on this podcast, we'd bring in a guest so that we could really fulfill the obligation of the title of the movie. So we're not alone. Welcome back to the podcast, Chantel Francis. Chantel, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. And I actually just wanted to bring in some interesting tidbits first. So okay. I actually went to middle school and high school with Sarah Pauly. Whoa. So she's in a grade older than me, but we are the same year and age. And I remember when we were younger, because we went to a performing arts school, we all went to see her movie, The Adventures of Baron Munchausen. Mm-hmm. And then like she was obviously on Road to Avonlea and whatnot. So like I've known Sarah Pauly my whole life. Our lockers were actually beside each other in middle school and high school. And then for all those that are listening that watch Big Brother Canada, Arissa Cox is in the same year as Sarah Pauly. So they actually grew up in the same art school in the same year. And so they're definitely contemporaries.
Whoa, what a class that you're. Well, she's the same age as you, but should I ask? She was bumped up ahead.
She skipped a grade from before.
The opposite was going to be that you failed.
I did not fail a grade. Yeah. I don't think that the school that we went to bumped anybody up. I think she was already up a grade from before. We started in grade four there. And so I was in grade four when she was in grade five or whatnot, but she was, you know, the same age as me.
It was probably from when she lived in like a Mennonite community and she was like so smart. And then she got to real
school. August taught her to read. And
Yeah, exactly.
So that's very cool. Talk about Sarah Pauly. Sarah Pauly, one of my favorite directors. We're going to chat about Women Talking. Of course, make sure you are subscribed to our feed, postshowrecaps.com/movies. You can search Post Show Recaps Theater in your podcaster, a podcast catcher of choice. Okay, big thoughts before we start. Spoiler free, as we always do, our recommendations. Chantel, I will let you go first. I was going to throw it to Ariel, but I feel like on the Women Talking episode, perhaps, or sorry, this whole episode.
I'm actually muting myself intermittently while I speak.
Great. Chantel, spoiler-free thoughts. What did you think?
I mean, I very much enjoyed it as a person that has seen a lot of movies, read a lot of scripts, read a lot of plays. It kind of took to me like an essay that was coming to life. And so it was kind of like an opinion piece in my opinion. And like, I enjoyed it as like, it was really beautiful to watch, and like the script was really well written. Like it was very beautiful in kind of its whole totality. And so I enjoyed it as like kind of an art piece as opposed to a movie, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I always forget to do this before we do the streaming thing, but I'll give a very quick, brief summary of what the movie is. And as we joked, like this movie, Women Talking is exactly what this movie is. Sort of follows these Mennonite women who hold a meeting and to decide whether they're going to stay at the colony and push back against the men after there's been some assaults on the women of the colony during the night, or if they're going to leave and pursue making their own colony and trying to figure out how to do that. And so they're sort of having this discussion in the hayloft, going over pros and cons of what they should do, essentially, and sort of a pretty, you know, star-studded cast of women: Jesse Buckley, Claire Foy, Rooney Mara. Frances McDormand is definitely in the movie. She produced and I believe bought the rights to the script. So I guess she's been in the trailer. She's not really in the movie, probably two scenes. But that's Chantel, I actually think, you know, being beautiful to look at, I've actually heard like conflicting things about that. A lot of the feedback initially from the movie, it's really like the color choice is really like toned down. I don't know what you call Sarah Pauly has called it. Yeah, muted. It's been called like a postcard. And the idea is that this is already a society. This is already like something of the past. I should also say the movie is based on real life events, although this is not what happened in the colony. This actually the title, that there's a title card very early on, I don't think it's a spoiler, to say this is a work of female imagination. And so this idea of them deciding whether or not to leave is all fictionalized. Miriam Tave's book, that's what it's, this part is fictional, about them getting together and deciding what to do is all fictional. But yeah, a lot of people didn't love the muted color palette. And there's also, I see some critique of, they're in the loft, the barn loft. That's actually a sound stage with green screen around it, which I actually didn't realize, but a lot of people have found that a little bit. But I agree with you. I thought it was beautiful. But Ariel, what did you think of Women Talking?
I'm surprised to learn that it was green screen, the sound stage, because I think what you were kind of getting at is that wasn't my impression, but obviously this isn't the kind of movie, as I say that, like this isn't the kind of movie that you're paying attention to that kind of thing. You know, it's not like you're watching like a CGI monster attack a person. Right. So you're not like, does that look real or not?
Did I miss that part? That part
right? There was like a post credit. There was a post credit. Yeah. Like,
Scarface Jones.
Scarface Jones,
which is the name of Frances McDormand's character.
I found this movie very, very affecting in a lot of ways. Very, very beautiful. Very difficult to watch at times for obvious reasons. But the performances, as with any play, right? And this one feels very much like a play, as kind of Chantel was getting at. It's all about the performances, and you have, I mean, if you look at the poster, you look at, you know, the IMDb page, it's like incredible heavy hitters, like incredible women, actors who, some of who are really well known, some of who are lesser known, but they really elevate the pain and the crisis that these women find themselves in. And it's really harrowing. Like, this isn't a movie that's easy to watch, but I think it's, I personally found it rewarding ultimately and cathartic. And I think it's a movie that has stayed with me. And I was telling both of you before we started recording that I just watched the trailer again to kind of like get myself in that mindset. And I was like, oh, I have to go watch this again.
Yeah. So I will be very frank. This is my favorite movie that I saw last year. I don't know whether you can say it's a 2022 or a 2023 movie. It premiered at Telluride, and then I saw it at TIFF. And so I did see it in a pretty full house. And also, it was the second runner-up for People's Choice at TIFF, which maybe was some Canadian bias with Sarah Pauly. I don't know. Just lost to The Fabelmans. And then I saw it, I've seen it two times since, and the second time I saw it was actually at TIFF Bell Lightbox, the theater that TIFF runs in Toronto, and it was a Q&A with Miriam Taves and Sarah Pauly. And so again, a full, like, packed crowd of people who I think, like, were very excited to see this film. So I feel like that could sway, like, my, like, the two times I saw it were pretty cool experiences to see it. Like, but two times I've seen it, I've been in the same theater as Sarah Pauly. So it's like maybe I'm biased, but it is, I think, my type of movie. I don't know if it's the best movie of last year, but it's my favorite movie. It just did. This is what I love, which is, it's a movie that is going to just, like, sit in sadness basically, right, for 2 hours. And ask, I think, to your point, like, that it feels like a little bit like an essay, Chantal. I think that's a right at times. I feel like you can feel, I watched the movie and then I read the book, and I felt like it's a pretty faithful adaptation for the most part. There's some big changes, which I think will be interesting to talk to when we get into the spoiler section of the movie. I do feel like part of what this movie is trying to do is have these women who have fairly different views of what they should do and their views on life, and that's informing. So as they're at, like, they ask kind of like almost what I was saying was like unanswerable question, or almost unanswerable questions. Like, they ask really big questions. So there's, you know, so they've been attacked, right? And they're asking, why does love, the pursuit of love, the loss of love, why does it lead to violence? And then you have all these women, like, they do come at, like, and it does feel a little like, I think I could see how it feels like, oh, we have to get this perspective and this perspective and this perspective and this perspective. But for me, I just thought it worked incredibly well, especially with the performances of particularly Rooney Mara, Claire Foy, and Jesse Buckley. And I actually am a little bit worried that none of them are going to get nominated, because they're just going to totally split the women talking, like, nomination votes. But I don't know. I just thought it was incredibly, like, powerful, a film. The idea of it being, you know, a work of a female imagination, I think, is really cool. They're really deciding, like, they start to get into, like, really existential, like, what should society look like? And it's really interesting. That's coming from, like, they're also deeply religious. So that's also, they're a Mennonite community. Mm-hmm. And that's also something I, like, wasn't expecting to, like, for it to resonate with me. And it really did. So I really love this movie. I highly recommend you go see it. A bit of a weird thing. I don't even know that has a full release yet. They kept pushing it back. Originally it was supposed to be in early December. Then it was, like, the December 23rd spot. I think they got some Avatar jitters and pushed it back again, and it got pushed back again. And I do not know what's happening with that. I don't know why they keep pushing it back, maybe to, like, be in more of the conversation for the Oscar nominations, because it did not get nominated for any Golden Globes. But if you're able to see this movie during the limited release, or wait for it to be a wide release, I think it's worth it. And yeah, there is some, like, some of the stuff that's filmed on location, like at a farm, I think is, like, really beautiful and stunning. So yeah. Anything else before we get it to before we start spoiling the movie, Chantel?
Well, one thing that, one of the acting coaches that I have, Andrew McElroy, he always, like, gets us to read different scripts. So we read the scripts, and then we go through and we pick what we want to work on that week, and then we prepare it, and then we bring it to class. And so this would be the type of script that I'd be like, oh my goodness, I need to do one of these characters. And right. That's what I really liked about it. Like, it was an actor's movie. It was somebody that comes from a performance background that really would want to sink their teeth into this meaty role where, you know, women tend to not get the best roles in our current day film and television, and even in plays to a certain extent. And so I think that any female actor or anybody in general that would want to sink their teeth into these roles. And so I think that that's what was really, kind of cathartic for me about watching it, was like, oh, I'd love to say some of these words.
Right. I think this movie passed the Bechdel test. I haven't checked, but I think it does.
All right. Hard to say.
Hard to say. All right, let's spill the PSRT. I'm going to give a brief plot summary. Again, it's a lot of them talking, so I think we'll talk through most of this in our discussion. But again, after a series of sexual assaults on the women of a Mennonite community, two families are tasked with determining whether to stay and fight or to leave after all of the women tied on their vote. Everyone got a vote, and these are the two options that tied. So these two families are determined with coming up the decision, and they're going to do this in the barn loft while all of the men en masse leave. Every single one are going to leave to go bail out the perpetrators. So it's the Friesen family, and this is a little bit hard to keep track of. It's taken me like a few times and reading the book to figure it out. So even while I read these, it's probably still not going to be super clear, but the Friesen family consists of Agata, played by Judith Ivy, and her daughters Ona, played by Rooney Mara, and Salome, played by Claire Foy. And then the Lowen family consists of matriarch Greta, played by Sheila McCarthy, and her daughters Mariche, played by Jesse Buckley, and Michal, played by Michelle McLeod. And then Mariche's daughter Oche, played by Kate Hollett, is there. And then also, this is not clear in the movie, but there's another girl named Nietzsche who is actually being taken care of by I think it's actually Salome. This is Salome's niece, Nietzsche, played by Liv McNeil. They're also in the barn loft. Ona asks August, played by Ben Whishaw, to take the minutes as none of the women can read or write. So over the course of these 2 days, they debate the options. They start pretty small, and then they get into these big, like, you know, discussions about the patriarchal structure of the colony. But also they go back and forth because they remain deeply faithful to the religion, which requires universal love and forgiveness. After like 2 days of debate, and there's some other things that happen, Claire Foy's daughter Salome is sick, needing to take antibiotics. I think her son comes up and has a cherry pit stuck in his nose one night. And we meet Melvin, who is someone who is assaulted but is a trans man, or at least non-binary, going by the name Melvin. Doesn't normally speak to any of the women, only to the children, and sort of babysits the kids. We meet Melvin. Then the cherry pit reveals that Jesse Buckley's character, Mariche, her husband, has come back, Klaus. And as they decide that they are going to leave, and the reason they decide to leave, Agata says that if they stay, they will commit violence. And this is Salome, Claire Foy's character, is basically saying, like, if I stay, I'm going to kill somebody. And we've seen flashbacks of her attacking one of the men who was locked up. Originally, the men were locked up in the colony. And then once that happened, the police come and they take the men into town, which is why the men are going to bail them out, because I'm going to kill one of them. And so Agata says, well, then we have to leave, because if we commit violence, then we'll be excommunicated. We won't be able to go to heaven. So let's leave. So they're deciding to leave, but Klaus puts a sort of ringer in the works. He's come back to sell some of the animals to get more bail money. And so they're worried that he might find out. He eventually drinks so much. He does assault both Mariche and Oche, his daughter and his wife. But he drinks so much in the morning that he's not able to remember. And he heads into town. And then the group decides to pack up all their stuff and leave. There's a bit more at the end. August is clearly in love with Ona. But Ona says that if she was with somebody, she would be married. She's also pregnant at the time due to one of the assaults. And he would like to take care of the baby. But she says that she wouldn't be herself if she was with somebody. So, they all decide to leave. We kind of learn that Ona has asked August basically to take the minutes to stop him essentially from killing himself. He does offer up the minutes to Salome before she leaves, and she says, no, these minutes are for you. August is going to stay and take care of all the boys who remain at the colony to try and sort of, you know, make sure that they're grow up to be good men, I guess. And the group leaves. Scarface yawns, played by Frances McDormand. She tries to get her daughter and her granddaughter to stay, but they ultimately leave and go. And essentially the movie ends with the group of all, pretty much all of the women from the colony, heading off down the trail to start a new life. That's the movie. Chantel, where should we start? It's pretty, you know, I thought very powerful movie. I know some people might think that, you know, I could see how some people think it's a tad boring, I think would be the critique of the movie. And it's not getting super, again, didn't get nominated for any of the Golden Globes. So I think it was in the running as, like, you know, best picture contender. And I think its stock has fallen. But yeah, what are your first thoughts? What's like the headline of this movie, Chantel?
Headline?
Yeah.
Women talking.
Women talking. That's
women
right.
Actually talking. I mean, I think I understand why it's not getting a lot of hype. And I think it's because it's reading like a play or an essay, or so it's a little bit more of like a dramatic piece, and it didn't seem to have like any like wow moments, or you know what I mean? It was just a lot of talking. And
yeah,
so,
the wow moments are like her son has a cherry pit in his nose. Like some of the flashbacks, you know, the flashbacks of this is where like there's like if there's action, which is like a horrible way to say it. But yeah, it's mostly about them talking in the barn loft.
Well, and I guess also for me, the one point that first part that jumped out, and you can actually tell me if it was in the book, was when the Monkees song came on. I know it was trying to make us understand the time frame. Yes.
Yeah. So in the book, it said right away that this is this happened. So the assault on the colony that happened in real life, it's the Manitoba colony in Bolivia. That happened between 2005 and 2009. And so all this is sort of happened, you know, the idea of when this when the book happens is supposed to be in 2009. And I do think the book tells you right away because it's telling you it's based on this real life event. And so you kind of know that they are a Mennonite community, but that they live, it's more modern than you think. And I think that the first time I saw the movie, it's definitely played as a surprise that this guy comes and he is taking the census and he's playing the Monkees song and he's in the car and you do, and he says they're taking the 2012 census, I believe. And so you find out that this is, you know, not 1952, it's 2012, and so it's played as a bit of a plot twist in the movie. And so I'm wondering what you did you like that or no?
I liked the idea of it. I did not like the song. The song was too out of place for me.
Song in the book as well. It's California Dreaming.
I think I might have liked that song better personally. Because
I love the song. I love it. I couldn't get the song out of my head, but
I mean, I think it's a great song. I just, for me, it was too abrupt. It was too like, the first thought that I had was like, oh, it's more of a Hollywood movie. You know what I mean? Like it kind of took me out of like the kind of dreamy, like raw elements of this movie when I'm watching it. And I think it did its job. Like it was really to slap me in the face and be like, this is actually a little more current than you're probably imagining. But I think the song choice for me, it didn't work for me.
So it's really interesting. The book is written before Me Too, and then Me Too happens. And it's very funny. There was in the Q&A, someone said like the questioner was like, somebody said that this movie couldn't have been made without the Me Too movement. I said, well, the book got written before, so not true. But I think that decision to sort of reveal it, that this is much, all of this is happening much closer to you than you think. Maybe not geographically. And actually, you know, it's a fictional Mennonite community. It's not the actual name of the colony. Malachna, I think, is the name of the community. They don't really say it that much in the movie. I like that choice to make you think, oh my God, like this, you know, this is stuff that's happening now. And even though it's a Mennonite community, you know, I think that certainly could be some people like, well, you know, it's not, you know, if they didn't live in the Mennonite community, you know, when, you know, whatever. I like that idea to like reveal that it's 2012 in the middle of the movie in terms of how it makes you rethink that this is not stuff that happened a long time ago. And the movie stuck with me. They play the song, I think, at the end of the movie as well. And I want to look up California Dreaming. I feel like is a very, this is Daydream Believer by the Monkees. And I feel like I also like it from the, you know, I think both of them work. I think California Dreaming maybe works a little bit better in terms of like, if we're going to leave, that's what we're going, you know, off to California Dream, right? And then this one is like Daydream Believer. Can we believe in something else, right? There's this point in the movie where Ona is basically saying like, can we just, before we decide where we're leaving, can we decide like what the rules of that place will be? And yeah, it's like them. So there's also a cover. I thought maybe they would use it. Is a cover by Anne Murray, Daydream Believer, Chantel. Anyway,
I mean, I understand that they wanted to use like the real song. So
no, they should use the real song. But yeah,
I just think that if they did California Dreaming, I think it would have for me worked a little bit better.
Fair enough. So Ariel, where should we jump to? What do you?
Think I will just say very quickly about the song. It seems to me like the song they chose for the movie is a little bit friendlier sounding, just to like for the purposes of literally trying to get people like to come out of their houses and wonder what the hell is going on. I think it was 2010 census, but because they only do it every 10 years. I'm such a good citizen. I know all these things about the U.S. No, yeah. But I mean, for me, the thing that has stuck with me the most, honestly, is I think it's let me just get this right. It's Claire Foy's performance as Salome, because to your point, Salome, to your point,
I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right.
No, I'm going to go with it. To your point about how she gets like flashbacks and she's the one talking about how violent she's going to get. And to her credit, she's very upfront with like, listen, I can't trust myself. We need to do something about this or else I'm literally going to kill someone. Just like the time that she spends voicing that and the true like desperation. And you see, like, I think they even do a slow-mo moment in that attack that we're referencing when she's trying to like
show it multiple times.
When she's trying to like break into that like barn, essentially, that some of these men are being kept in. And there's like this visceral, guttural scream that she has to do when they're like trying to pull her out of it. And it's just, she is the, I think at times these women are, you know, trying to have a coherent civil discussion for obvious reasons, because it's a very serious topic. But what her character is doing is refocusing the energy and making sure that they are keeping top of mind how dire the situation actually is. Like, they can talk all day about how, like, what's the right thing to do and what would our religion require us to do. But it's like, no, actually, we are physically in danger and I'm going to kill someone. And just like bringing that intensity and that energy that I think the movie really needs, frankly. I mean, I didn't find it boring at all, but I think for sure her character helps a lot in like maintaining a lot of intensity. And just like it's undeniable and it's unforgettable, both within the moment of like she's not allowing the women to forget and like how that her energy and her like role stays with you.
Yeah, there's these two families, but I feel like there's these three central women in Rooney Mara, Claire Foy, and then Jesse Buckley. And I do feel like if Rooney Mara and Ona is sort of the most optimistic in a sense of like we should go and this is what we should build, and then Mariche is the most like, no, let's stay and figure it out. And I think you sort of have Salome in the middle being probably, you know, I don't want to say any of them are the most realist or grounded, but she sort of is in the sense of, you know, she's like, you know, what if we stay, this is what it's actually going to look like to Mariche. And then if, you know, this is dangerous to leave. She also has, there's a lot. She has two kids and one of her kids' name is Meep, which is adorable. And she's the one who's sick and she walked to go get antibiotics from the Red Cross. And then she has a son who's like teetering on the age when they have the discussion about like how old should kids be, the boys, if they leave, and they eventually raise the age, but then he does not want to leave. So she has all of, I believe she actually uses, it's very subtle, but she uses the stuff that they were, the tranquilizer that they were drugging the women, the men who were drugging the women. She uses that on her son to get him to leave. It's pretty dark. But she's like the most filled with rage, which like feels like potentially the most realistic reaction to all of this stuff that's happened. I don't know. Do any of these three sort of central characters, like you're talking about, you know, wanting to, you know, read this script at some point and play this, which one of these three people, Chantel, would you be most excited to sort of get to play? Which one stuck with you the most?
Who was the one that was more combative about everything?
Yeah, that's Claire Foy, Salome.
Yeah, that'd probably probably go that route. Yeah. Like, if I'm gonna do it like a drama, I want to play the drama. I mean, I think that she has the most interesting kind of perspective, because like she doesn't necessarily want to go, and like, but she knows that she has to, like, just like, I think that she has a lot more things that she's grappling with and wrestling with, and she I think she gets to say better lines and stuff like that. So I think that she would be the character that I would want to dive into.
Yeah. I'll leave Ona for a bit, but so then we have Marici played by Jesse Buckley. I feel like also getting a ton of attention as like a relay breakout. One of the strong. I think all three of these women have really great performances, but Marici being, I guess you would call her like the most conservative lens of any of the women in terms of, let's just stay more on the like Scarface Frances McDormand side of things of like, mm-hmm. let's just stay and do nothing. Essentially, there's these interesting conversations where, you know. Well, if we stay, we're going to be told to forgive them. I think Ona's like, well, is it forgiveness if you like are forced to forgive? Like, is that true forgiveness? But what do we think of Jesse Buckley's performance as Marici, who plays sort of, you know, I don't think there's a villain in this movie, but, you know, the men are the villain, but certainly probably plays the most sort of, you know, she's not the most violent. She's probably the most confrontational of any of the women in the loft.
I mean, Jesse, Marici specifically, I think, I will just say this. Okay. I think, you know, to the points of it being a little, monochromatic and, and then like not doing such a great job, keeping, which to me ultimately didn't matter for the most part, but there were moments where I was just like, wait, who is so-and-so related to?
Yeah. I feel like the three women are very distinct, and I you know all the characters, you might not know their names, and I don't think you know how they're related. But you like, certainly get everybody's
I genuinely
point of view.
Had a problem yeah. telling some of them apart. They're also wearing, I don't think it's called a habit. They're wearing like a head scarf a hair scarf, yes. like on their heads. And those are all the same colors. And like, I know who Claire yeah. Foy is and I know yeah. who like Jesse Buckley is, but then I'm like, wait, which one is she? Is she the combative one? Is she not?
But yeah, Claire Foy and Jesse Buckley, I feel like I could get them. I feel like during the first watching, I definitely.
Yeah, I felt bad. I was like, oh no, my and God, can I not tell women apart? Like,
no, I'm looking right now at their pictures and it's Marici that I would play that role. So we got it all okay. right there. So yeah, okay. yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. I was like, Salome is like, she's not as outburst. She's not like as confrontational in the loft. She's like the one who like attacked the men. But yeah, yeah. Marici is the one who's like so confrontational in the loft. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
What I thought was a really interesting yeah. choice, though, about the entire film is like not really seeing the men, so it actually
okay.
really
yeah.
became kind of like the boogeyman or the ghost of, and like, you know, when I was reading actual articles about the real life occurrences that were happening, like the women didn't know what was going on, like yes. they would, you know, have like a flash of them being, we'll say the R word in a field, and they'd wake up in the morning with grass in their hair, and they're trying to piece it together what's going on and being
scorned. The bishop, who is a character in the book, there's a lot like the things that they get told is like, you have to say, it's like, it's not the men doing it, this is like the devil is what they're like being told, and that's the real life events, is that like they never really could figure out who was doing it, and there's a lot of like gaslighting in terms of this is like a spiritual thing that's happening, this is the devil, like, and if you leave, like, it'd just be like easier for them to get you, right? So not that I think they were even thinking about leaving, but yeah. But I do love the choice to not have the men. Even Klaus, like, so we have August, which I think we can get to because I think he's very interesting. Klaus is kind of the only other man we even like see, and he's completely blurred out, right? And it happens, and I guess they shot it with seeing Klaus. There is the bishop decides to stay, he does not go in the book, and then the barn that they're in is a senile old man who appears in the book as well. He often like comes up and is confused as why the women are using his hayloft. And so there are more men in the book, but I do think it's right in the movie, you know, women talking to just, you know, almost every man is blurred out in the background is good.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I think it's a good opportunity to talk about August. So August in the book is the narrator of the book. And that is because he is the, he's the only one. So the it's like sort of the book premise, right? Is he, this, these are the minutes, that's the book. And so he's in the movie, as sort of, I think more interestingly, as sort of with this relationship with Ona. They had originally filmed the movie with Ben Whishaw doing the narration, and they didn't like it. And they said they kept trying, and they filmed all these different narrations. Ultimately, the narration ends up being Oche speaking to Ona's like newborn baby. We see the baby at the end of the movie. I think it works really well, and certainly better than I think it would have with Ben. I think they kind of got stuck in this idea that, like, I wonder if there's a world where they decided to do the narration early, that Ben Whishaw is not in this movie at all. Do you need someone sort of taking the minutes? Because the idea in the book, right, it's like, this is what was written down. So I think it's very interesting. And it's very funny at the both Q&As, there's a lot of questions about Ben. It's like, stop asking questions about the one man in the movie, please. But I think he's an incredibly sympathetic character. I think he's one of the, like, I talked a lot about like sad face acting Ariel on Push Your Cups Theater. I think he's like one of the best sad face actors of our generation. Yeah. I think incredibly compelling and character in the movie. But I'm wondering what you folks thought of Ben Whishaw here as like the sole man in Women Talking.
Well, can you firstly just help me understand why he wanted to take his life?
Okay, so yeah, also I didn't not think super well explained.
And this is in the book too, where Grace, right? So
it's in the book. Well, it's also in the movie. So
right,
he
right,
says,
right. But I just meant his character in general is in the book. Yeah.
Yes. So in the movie, it's when he says, "Wait," to Salome. He says, "I'll get the minutes." He goes, "Oh, I actually have something else for you." And he has a gun, and she says, "Why do you have a gun?" And he doesn't answer. And so the idea here is that Ona has asked him. So his parents, his mom used to run essentially like a side school of like teaching basically people how to be like revolutionaries, like essentially what like they're sitting here and doing, his mom would teach. And there's a lot of stuff in the book where like Ona will repeat some of the stuff that Ona says in the movie are direct quotes from Ben's from August's mom. His mom and dad end up getting excommunicated. They leave and both of them die. And so that's why August decides to come back. He has gone to school and he decides to come back because he doesn't have anywhere else to go because his parents have passed away. So he comes back to the colony and he's sort of just this, like, he gets ridiculed a lot. Like even in the movie, like Mariche is very mean to him, like, you know, an effeminate man, you know, like they're very mean to him. And you presume that that happens a lot with the men, but he's like needed because he is educated. So he can teach all the boys in the school. And so, yeah, I don't know that the movie does a great job explaining how sad and depressed Ben is. I think we get, or sorry, August is. We get a lot more of it because it's like from his perspective. There's a scene where he's talking with Oche and he's like, she's spinning the water wheel. And he's like, oh, did you know in the war, like they had people like power the bunkers by like riding bikes? You'd be great at it. And she's like, okay, thanks. Like, thanks, weird man. You know? And he, like, internally, we get a lot more of his inner mind of like, oh my God, that was way too weird to say it to a child, you know? But yeah, the idea is that he is incredibly depressed. He does love Ona. Ona is never going to be with him. And he's depressed. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, I definitely really enjoyed his character. I don't know if it's because I need to have a man in a movie to make me like the movie. Like, I don't know. But I definitely felt that he was needed. I think that if he wasn't in it taking the minutes, I think it would be even more so like a play that was being recorded. I think it just kind of, I don't know, it brought it together in my opinion. I do wish that they weren't so mean to him. I did feel bad for him. I'm like, he really is doing what you're asking for. And there was one point where he was kind of wanting just to get the meeting to continue on and just to move them forward. And they snap at him. And I was like, oh, he's being so nice. Like, why are you being so
it's
mean?
It's mostly Mariche. It's mostly right, Mariche. And they don't really like defend him in it. Like, right. Like nobody's like, I do love, I think it's Agata, who is played by Judith Ivy. Who's the one who has she's like please I can't die here, like I'm dying. Please let's leave at the end of the movie. I thought she was great. I thought both the main sharks, actually, we haven't really talked about them, they're both great. I love her like relationship with August. One of my favorite lines from the movie is so Ona leaves and you turn around and August goes, Ona, I love you. And Ona like looks back, she doesn't say anything, and then she walks off. And then Agata comes out and she goes like, she loves you too, August. She loves everybody. And then she like leaves. So I thought her relationship with August was often very sweet, but yeah.
Yeah, I thought the same about both those matriarchs, like you said.
August and like that ending scene, it did make me cry. I thought that I was going to be bawling this entire movie, because when I was watching the preview from Close came up and I was like,
we're gonna talk about Close. Yeah, we'll talk about Close at some point. Yeah,
I was hyperventilating watching that trailer, so I was like, oh boy,
Close, an upcoming A24 movie. I'm very excited about it's about like a little, I believe, French or Polish, I'm not sure, French, an international film, a little LGBTQ coming of age story that I cannot wait to talk about in this podcast. But
so I thought that like I was really gonna be crying the whole time, I didn't cry just until the ending, though. That moment with August and Mara Rooney's character, like that really got me. I was like, oh, the love that never can be, and she's leaving and she's so good and he's such a kind man, and like it's just never gonna work. And yeah, so I did get emotionally moved, and it was through his character.
Yeah. What do you think of August, Ariel?
I love August so much. Like, easily my favorite Ben Whishaw role of all time. Like, I don't think I can't think of anything else. I mean, he was in this like little known show that I've never met anyone in real life who's ever seen it, so I will just plug it here. It's called The Hour. I think it was only two seasons. It's like British show. And he was incredible in that, but like just the emotion that he conveys in this movie, like there's a part where he's literally just sitting there crying because he's listening to these women like basically fight for their lives. Like, I'm getting emotional now just thinking about it. Like he's trying so hard to not insert even his opinion. Like his opinion is asked for at a couple of points, if I'm remembering correctly. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, there are a couple of points where he kind of starts to talk and they're like, you don't get to talk. And then there's another part where he stops himself, where he's like, actually, never mind. Like, it's not my place to even speak. But like, there is something that always gets me about, this is going to sound so dumb, but like, good men crying in movies, mm-hmm. like, it's gonna get me. Like, one of my favorite things about Spider-Man No Way Home, bet you didn't have that on your bingo card that I was gonna bring that up, is that the majority of the male men characters like have tears in their eyes, like full on like sobbing, crying, because I think obviously, and this movie I think is getting at that a little bit, like the emotion of like men and like what's considered toxic or whatever in culture, like they don't traditionally don't show emotion, and especially in movies, like it's not something that is shown that much. And I think here it's just his incredible face acting. And actually, I should admit, I realized in this movie that he reminds me of someone that I know in real life. So it was like, oh my god, it's so and so. Oh my god, he's so good and kind, just like my friend. And it's incredible. Like that moment that we've already brought up where he is speaking to, is it Salome or Marichet at the very end where it's the gun conversation?
Salome.
Yeah. Salome, thank you. I'll get this.
It's fine. I've watched it three times. It's
okay. And he, yeah. The way, like you said, Grace, or both of you were talking about, like she asks him for the gun, or he says, "Wait, hold on, I have." Yes, yeah. he says, "Hold on, I have actually something else that I want to give you." And he's like, "Well, why do you?" And then she's like, "Well, why do you have a gun?" And just that silence and his like shame, and then his tears, and yeah. I am like ugly crying at this point, just like Chantel said, and. It's just incredible. And I think the trick of that scene in particular, and I think that's probably my favorite moment in the whole movie, mm-hmm. is that she has been one of the most combative, abrasive characters in the context of their conversations and to him specifically. And then for it to be her who says to him, don't do this, August, like don't do that to yourself. And like being incredibly kind to him. It's just such a well-earned moment, and I think his character is it, I hate to say like the his character is probably like my third favorite character.
You can put him number one if you want.
Movie.
You can put him number one.
Well, I think it's it wouldn't be true to make a number one. Maybe it would be a tie because he works when he's like reflecting or mirroring things back at from or at other people, at these women. Mm-hmm. So I think he doesn't work without them. And I think just the, like the idea of him trying to be a decent man in the face of all this like monstrosity that these terrible, terrible other men have of these terrible acts that they have committed. It's like, and I think the reason that it gets to me is like, it's like the quiet tragedy, the like very you can see this, like you can understand his emotions. Whereas some of the things that the women have been through, it's just like so, it's like unimaginable horror that like is hard to kind of quantify or like fully wrap your head around. So I think it's he's great. He's so good. Like I was genuinely so impressed, and I was ready to be like, why is he even in this movie?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Of August.
Let's talk about, there's a few other characters. It's a you know, an ensemble cast to a degree, even if we sort of have like these people who are front and center. I thought it's Sheila McCarthy who plays Greta, who plays one of the matriarchs. Every time she's like, I would like to talk about my horses. I have a story about my horses. It was great. Actually, this brings me to a point. I was listening to an interview with Sarah Pauley, and she asked Miriam Taves, like the question was like, what's the one thing from the book that you want to make sure is like maintained as we adapt it? Because there's obviously a lot of changes that they made. We talked about the narration and the song and things like that. And she just said the laughter. And I do think that the movie, for me, does a really good job of, you know, that feeling, you know, when you are in something like serious and then somebody makes like a comment or a joke and it just like breaks you in a way that like you can't stop. The scene where I think it's Greta who says like, maybe we should just kill the men. And and then Ona, I think, starts to laugh. They all start to laugh because it's like, it's clearly a joke of like, yeah, we'll just get kind of, I guess, like a little bit like tongue in cheek, like, you know, there's truth in every joke. And you just start breaking out into laughter. And then I think it's Mariche who looks, and August is writing the notes still. And she's like, he's taking the minutes saying that like, we're going to kill the men. Like, and it's not like she's not mad. She's like dying of laughter. And I do think like there's a couple moments in there. I think the sort of the teen girls in Oche and Nietzsche add a little bit of levity. I think like one of the lines I get the laugh line is like they're all talking, they're doing some pros and cons, and Nietzsche is like, this is so boring, which I think is like what some people might think about the movie as well. So that was very funny. And so, yeah, I just think there's like, there is a levity within the movie in a way that there is this like womanhood, them coming together and they're the ones who are deciding. I think it's like one of my favorite parts of the film is the way that they interject some levity while they're talking about this very serious decision that they're going to make, Chantel.
I also, what I thought was interesting too, was because the women, if I'm not mistaken, can't read or write.
Yes.
There was a lot of art that was being drawn, like some charcoal kind of drawings and stuff like that.
So Nietzsche is a little artist, and she, when they vote, it's like, I think the beginning of the film is like, it's like there's three symbol, like three art symbol. There's like a landscape, and then there's like the back of a horse, and like, and then two people fighting or something. And it's like, that's how they know which one they're voting for, and they put an X, right? Yeah.
So I thought that was really also really cool with like kind of understanding who these women were. Like, not, I can't really conceptualize not being able to read and write. And mm-hmm. So I thought it was just really interesting just seeing these images, and like they understand these images, but they don't understand words. And yeah. So like, I thought that that also brought a lot of just an interesting layer to this film, and that I found was really quite compelling. With the laughter bit, one thing that stood out that I don't know if I liked it or didn't like it, but Mara Rooney's dimples, like it was always about her dimples. I'm always like, it might be a little bit too much dimple or maybe too much. Mara, because like she.
Oh, Rooney Mara. Mara. Yeah. No, you're good.
Yeah. And so I like whenever her dimples came out in full like smile, it just really brought me out. Like, oh my god, she's such a huge
like,
star.
Like, oh my god, it's Jeff Probst.
Yeah. You know what I mean? But she's such a huge star.
Yeah.
Everybody, like, there's nobody's wearing really any makeup that's quite visible, and it's quite, as we say, it's like a muted landscape. And so whenever the smile happened, these huge dimples came out, and I'm like, oh my god, movie star. Like, it did take me out a little bit.
I feel so hard for like Ona and the first, like Ona, my favorite of the three of them on my first watch. I think looking back, I do think like there's like some great complexity to Salome. And I appreciate Marice, I think, a little bit more. She's like so much the like most like sort of like you're like, you're so wrong, I think.
and
right, you know, they get to the point where it's like, yeah, like and I think it's Agata, it's Salome's mom, who's like, I'm really sorry that I never like taught you that you could have something else other than like be a husband to a man who beats you up. You know, it's like really powerful. But I feel so hard for the, like, you know, the optimist, the forever optimist, the, like, you know, they call her a spinster and she's like, you know, whatever, you know, I'm not going to be with a man. You know, I fell for it so hard. The perfect little Ona who's like, you know, waxing poetic about like, well, this is what these are the tenants of the future colony that we're going to, you know, make, you know, even to the point where, you know, they're like, there's a really powerful interaction when they're talking about, and I think it's Marice who's like, well, you're gonna eventually forgive these men. She's like, yeah, eventually I will forgive all the men who did this, I just not yet. And they're like, well, won't you hate your child, like he's like born of a rape? And she's like, no, I love this child endlessly, like he's done nothing wrong yet, you know, like that stuff. I just like, I know it's like so Hollywood cheesy whatever, but like it totally worked for me because I get all the other stuff, right? Of like, I think it's balanced really well for me, at least, to have, you know, two other points of view that are not this like relentless optimist, you know, who's like, you know, I love the scene when they're on the roof. She calls August up on the roof and he's teaching her how to look like navigate with the Northern Star. And he's like, oh, you already knew this. And she's like, yeah, but like, you know, it was nice for you to teach me, you know, like it's, I really adore the Rooney Mara character. I think on a rewatch, she's like, I think she's still my favorite, but I appreciate some of the other performances more. But I just fell in love with like Ona as Rooney Mara in this movie. Yeah.
Yeah, and
Ona.
Why.
Yeah,
Ona. It was one of those things where, like, as I sit here and like before openly admitted to not being able to tell some of these people apart, I was like, oh, I know who Rooney Mara is, and then like, it wasn't, and then I couldn't really. I thought basically I had it all confused, and then when I realized that Ona was Rooney Mara at the end, like the movie was over, I was like, oh my god, I'm so dumb.
She was like Frances McDormand.
I've never seen her as a blonde. So like, oh, yeah. I didn't even like think that could be here. This is so
the
dumb,
dimples,
but I was just
dimples.
Yeah.
Listen, all I'm looking at is hair color. Like the dimples couldn't have caught that. But it's she really is, like you said, she's like this force for good. And like, yeah. I do love that, even taking the religious part out of it, like it's almost like these. They're trying to be like enlightened higher beings, like, you know, whether you want to call them like pacifists or whatever, again, like taking religion out of it. I did enjoy like, it doesn't even have to be about religion. It's like, we don't want to become those people. So how do we make changes so that we don't like defy our enlightened like goals? It's like really powerful.
I have a question. Mm-hmm. So nearer to the end of the movie, they were all singing a hymn.
Yes.
And is that the same hymn that they're playing on the Titanic when it was sinking? Like, there was it was an orchestra version of them all playing. Was it the same song? Because that's what immediately I'm like, oh my God, this they're sinking. They're not going to make it out of the town.
We need to call James Cameron, Grace.
It might be. It's nearer My God to Thee is what they're singing. Played on the show. Yeah. Allegedly the last song that they play on the Titanic. Yeah, it's the same song.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thought of Titanic. I was like, they're playing? That's like, yeah, it is. It is.
Their lives are sinking right now. It kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
Interestingly, in the something else that changed from the book to the movie is in the book, there is the colony that's like, there's like another colony near them, and they get word from the other colony that there's a fire up north, and north is the only way that they're gonna go. And so part of the book is this idea that like it's even more like they're heading into like danger and unknown, is that there's like allegedly a fire, which they completely took out of the movie, which I actually think is better. I like the idea of like, I already feel like it's like so unknown, like what you're heading into. I don't know if the fire was necessary, but yeah, I guess they originally had like a shot of like where it pans up and they're leaving and it's like off the, you know, into the horizon. There's a version where there's like a fire up ahead, and that was a whole plot point in the show of like, can we leave because there's a fire, which I actually think works better. Somebody else I want to shout out just very quickly before we wrap up is Michelle McLeod, who plays Michal, mostly known for like smoking and having anxiety. I think the worst thing in the the meanest somebody is in the movie, probably. I'm like, there is Ona's kind of mean to Mariche when she's like talking about like letting her husband beat her up. And even Ona is like kind of mean when she's just like, I just asked a rhetorical question. I actually didn't say it. It's like, you know what you're doing, Ona. But when Mariche is like yelling at Michal for like having a panic, she's like, we all were assaulted and we all like the rest of us don't, none of us act up. But Michal secretly smoking, one of my favorite plot points of the movie.
When I first saw her come on the screen, I thought it was Kat from Euphoria. And I was I really did. And I was like, actually looking to see what was her. I thought she was a really great performance. I really liked her as well. I'm like, I always like the little bit of the rebel that's like smoking in the corner and just like,
Canadian, I think originally from Peterborough, Chantel. So
I looked at the credits at the end. I was like, okay, definitely filmed in Toronto. I know these casting directors. Like, I know you as an actor. Yes. I really liked her as well. And I was like, be quiet. Like, you know, people process their trauma differently. So don't be upset with her for the fact that like she has these panic attacks or these, you know, episodes. Like, you know, you guys have all experienced horror. Please don't judge this poor woman for the how she you know lives through it. So
yes. All right, I think that's mostly. Is there anything, did we miss anything? It's a very thought-provoking movie, so I'm sure we did miss things, but yeah.
I just love, I will say, like, the, because I didn't realize till after that it was part of like the marketing, when they like the choices that they have as they see it, they being the women, are do nothing, stay and fight, leave.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Those are the three options. And I love that was part of the marketing, because it like gave it like an intensity and just like obviously makes it easy for people to understand. But it's like actually really powerful. And even though ultimately they're only deciding between two of those things, although, you know, Scarface has something to say about that, Scarface Jens, but it's super powerful. And just the idea that, one thing I forgot to say about August, like
Oh, you want to talk about August again?
The month, not the person. I think, because this is another point of like why I think he's important as far as the plot of the movie is, mm-hmm. like he's giving the women, like he's a physical stand-in for what like for something that the women are leaving. So like, I think without him, the idea that they're leaving, yes, that's harrowing and like they're upending their lives. But for you to have like someone to look at who they're leaving behind is, I think, like the emotional linchpin for like what I guess really just Ona and who, because she loves everyone and what she's feeling. But like, I think that's really, it's actually really clever to have him be like the stand in for that, because it totally works. And obviously I only want to talk about men.
Well, they ask him, they're like, you know, are 12 and 13 year old boys like dangerous? And he gives this answer of like, it's one of my favorite, again, like I think there's a lot of really good writing in the movie, but this line of like, yes, they are dangerous, but also they're an age where like you can teach them. And it's like, yeah. And then he's the one who's like, so there's a lot of talk in the movie as well about like in the book, like, could the men ever come? And I think they end up settling. I don't know in the movie if they do this, but in the it's once the women are settled and the men can come if they agree to the terms of what the new colony is. But part of this idea is that August will stay and try to like teach men how to be men, which will be a very difficult task for him. But he's you know, I do, you know, in terms of like allyship, I do think he is a representative of that in terms of you know, like a society just of women, just from a, you know, procreation standpoint, will not survive, right? So you do. I guess they are bringing Muslim women,
the youngest boys. Yeah, but the youngest. I think, yeah. And yeah, to that point, like the metaphor of like, it is your responsibility, like you are a man, it is your responsibility to call these things out, these behaviors right out, and like fight this thing. It is not just you know, the women who have to like literally fight for their lives, for change, right, for these things to stop happening. I think is like is an important like subtext thing to what his character is doing. And I just thought of one last thing. Also, the other thing that really made me emotional was like, we have the trans character or non-binary character, I don't think we're like told specifically, who doesn't speak at all until I can't remember, is it Ona?
Yeah, it's,
who like
no,
calls
it's,
him the it's, calls them the correct name, the name that they go by.
It's not okay, I will say it's not perfect, because Agatha's like, come on, like stop doing nonsense, speak up. And so Melvin does say something, and then at the end they call him Melvin. So well, it's not perfect.
The way I perceive, or maybe I'm remembering it correctly, but Melvin only speaks to the person that calls them Melvin, and then any other time where the person is like, come on, stop with the bullshit, Melvin like doesn't say anything. But
he definitely responds to a time when Agatha is like, yeah, come on, like stop being nonsensical or whatever. There is just this emotional moment at the end where that's it. Agatha does say thank you, Melvin. And he, I don't think he even speaks in response. He said,
thank you for saying my name, I think.
Okay. Right.
Yeah. There's that one part. The only part I remember them speaking was that part, but like ultimately that's the only like sign of respect that they get. And I think that's powerful, like in the sense of just like, taking a moment to acknowledge that why that's important.
I just have one question for myself, and I don't think it was really told in the movie, but how did the men start, like what was it like, why did they start doing this? Because they could, like, it's like, I can't understand how it became a thing.
I think they talk a little bit about that. Like, it's just like, it's all like, you get told you can have whatever you want, you know, you can do whatever you want. So they all start. Yeah. I think the idea is that it's a group of eight of them who start doing it. And essentially, you know, I actually think the idea that it's not every man in the colony, but every man turns a blind eye to the fact that it's happening. Yeah, right? Once they learn that it's happening, they don't speak up about it, but it's these eight men who figure out that they can take the tranquilizer, sedate these women, drug them, and then rape them. It's all like power and whatever, you know, because they've been basically taught that they're in charge of the thing, you know? Yeah, they can do whatever they want, you know? Yeah, it's awful. Yeah.
It's shocking and horrific.
I mean, and it's a real story. And you know what I said, that the, you know, that this is a work of female imagination in terms of they don't decide to like stay or leave or go, but they did speak up. The women did speak up at the court trial. And 8 men were arrested and sent to prison. And so that of itself is a revolutionary act in the Mennonite community for these women to testify.
And they didn't want them to be convicted, if I'm not mistaken, the women. They didn't want that to be their fate, which was also wild. I think it's because of their being such a religious community, but they didn't want them to be quote unquote punished, right. Which I think is also quite, I still have to wrap my head around how
super complicated.
Right. And like, even in the actual movie, I was like, just leave, get out of there. Like, go.
You're wasting like, time.
Like, you don't need to talk about this anymore. Just go. But I definitely don't come from the same place that these women are coming from. And so that was just like my initial perspective of be like, is there not one voice of reason there? Just get out.
I think from the sense of like, you know, there is this idea that, you know, we have this perception that people, women who are abused, you know, all the stuff that people say like, oh, well, they didn't leave. They texted, you know, they like stayed in touch. They went back, you know, all of this stuff that like, it's that's not what, you know, a lot of women, do these things, right? Because they're, you know, it's a more complicated thing than, you get assaulted and you leave, you know, that their lives are intertwined. You know, no, I'm not like trying to like, yeah, lecture, you know, it's just, I think the movie actually does like a really good job of, you know, exploring that larger theme. One last thing I'll say, I really love the music. As I've been trying to, since 2022, read every day, and I decided to read the book after I watched the movie. I like to read with background music on, and I found that I was putting on the Women Talking soundtrack to like, while I was reading. It's really good. This is Hildur Guðnadóttir, who is has done, I think, won the Academy Award for Joker, which, you know, just the sound for Joker, but was also did Tar this year and Cesario.
Movies are so similar.
did the soundtrack for Chernobyl as well. So a big get, I feel like, for Women Talking to get Hildur. So the soundtrack I think is really, really good. I think like when I watch the trailer, I'm like, oh yeah. I've seen the trailer like a million times. The movie. Yeah.
Sarah Pauly.
Yeah. All right. Any final thoughts? I feel like we've talked a lot about the movie.
We've talked enough. It's time to vote.
I can't wait for the sequel, Men Talking. It's gonna be
No, it's Men Listening.
Men Listening. That's right.
I can see it. They cross out the word talking and then somebody's listening.
Right. Chantel, thanks so much for coming on.
Incredible.
Thank you for having me. And you know, I love supporting Canadian film and theater and stuff like that. And so it was really nice when like I was like, oh yeah, I wanted to see this movie. And then seeing it was from Sarah Pauly, someone that I've grown up with their career for the most part. And you know, I've been like, you know, my mom knows her. And if I bumped into Sarah Pauly, she'd be like, oh, Chantel Francis, like it's just somebody that you know from a very young age. And so it's just really nice to see how she's kind of evolved as a creative woman. And so I thought that like it was really beautiful. I thought it was really artistic. I thought it was, as an actor, something that I would love to read the script, or I would love to do it in scene study class. And so it was, thank you so much for just inviting me to come on here. And then I got an opportunity to go and sit in a theater and kind of just take in this work. So I'm really thankful. Thank you.
What else do you have going on, and where can people find you?
Going on? Do you have anything going on? It's the new year, right? I'm still just covering the challenge 38. I do a recap usually Wednesday nights right after the episode. And then on Fridays, we do like a power ranking at 8 p.m. Eastern. That's all that's going on. I know that Traders UK is starting, or sorry, USA is starting this week. But they're dropping the whole season.
I know. I don't know if folks have seen the Rob as a podcast schedule for it, but they're like watching it and then podcasting and then watching right and podcasting and watching
Rob
and podcasting.
Schedule. Yeah.
So I want to cover it, but on my YouTube channel. So that's Reality Realness with 3 S's. you know, if you subscribe, you can find out if I end up doing covering it or what I'm going to do about that. Who knows?
We're going to vote after
yes,
this.
Yes, vote. Vote to stay on my podcast. And yes, if you can go on Instagram at ShanFranFran, all my socials are there, so you can find me for sure. But going on, just the challenge right now.
Cool. Ariel, what about you?
I am covering Dark, Netflix's beloved genre bending series that they somehow allowed to finish and didn't cancel prematurely. We're doing you, myself, and DM Philly are doing a rewatch podcast with full spoilers, so be careful if you're going to jump in here on Push Your Recaps. That's been super fun. We're just getting started on that, and I got some other stuff coming up. We're going to be, you and I are going to be covering the Natasha Lyonne, Ryan Johnson Peacock series called Poker Face. Yes, it came to me. I was like, if I make the sentence long enough, I will remember the name. So excited to get into that. And I'm on Twitter at that other Ariel.
Every time I go to Google Poker Face, just to like check the Wikipedia, you know, there's that you know,
Lady Gaga's like, I'm here.
Yeah. And then I'm like, oh, right. Poker Face, Peacock or whatever. It's not whatever network it's on. Yeah.
Appearance. They're going to have Lady Gaga on.
That'd be great. I think that's I'm also covering The Last of Us, big HBO show that drops next week. So that should be fun. Covering that with Mike Bloom on the recap and Video Game Club with Taryn. With guests along the way. Also have Mayfair Witches with DM Philly, the Anne Rice universe. So they did Interview the Vampire, now they're doing Mayfair Witches. So check that out. Should be some coverage out already if you're listening to this podcast. And Roll Call, actually, rename it. Rob is a podcast game night, new name for the show. And so we should have an episode coming on Tuesday, January 17th, we are going to be playing Ticket to Ride, a very fun game. You can catch the replays of which both Chantel and Ariel have played on the show before.
Wow.
Chantel played Ticket to Tokyo. So check out the replays over on the YouTube and Twitch channels for Rob Has a Podcast. We'll be back later this week with a little, you know, the viral sensation, Megan. The horror movie, I saw it. It's very fun.
Horrific viral campaign. Yeah.
Finn Wolfhard sat right in front of me at the movie, so that was fun.
He was busy on the TikTok. Oh, no, that's Noah Schaff. Never mind.
You know what? He didn't. Generally, I just was assumed when I saw Finn Wolfhard come and he like sat down like two rows ahead of me, I was like, oh, this guy's going to get like mopped for pictures. And like, I was like, and it was just the day that the Stranger Things salaries got dropped. And I was like, this guy, I think, is going to get like, is from Stranger Things. He just like sat in the movie and then walked out.
What are you doing at a theater? Run. People are going to mob you.
You're going to mob you. What are you doing? No, it's fine. No,
good for them.
Just you. No.
Nobody mugged him. Nobody mugged him.
No. I support
our polite Canadians.
Being polite. Yeah, that's true. That's a whole other thing.
Yeah.
The US can never.
I'm on Twitter at High From Grace for anything else I'm doing. We'll be back later with our coverage of Megan. Until then, I'm Grace. That's Ariel. This is our show.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino. With cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.